Running up hour number two. We've got Logan Camden on the phone line. It is Top 10 Tuesday, and we are going to devote the next hour to the top 10 storylines in the National Football League at the halfway point. We've got Farmville's very own co-host of the Nerd Sesh podcast with Carson Breber, Logan Camden. My man, how are we?
I'm doing fantastic. Happy to be here, Peyton. Happy to talk some ball.
A real king with us today to talk about some football. Your Pittsburgh Steelers, though, before we get into any of that, and I imagine that that might be one of your five storylines, are the last undefeated team in football. And I'm going to say I told you so because I did preseason, and somehow I was higher on your team than you were, and they seem to be proving me right so far.
Oh, no, you're exactly right, Peyton. What we saw last week against Tennessee, I haven't seen our offense come out. You saw the graphic like everybody else watching. Mm-hmm. I haven't seen our offense come out that hot in the start of a game in a long time. I was getting tingly. I was getting excited. this offense looked electric to start the game. I wish we had continued it into the second half. I thought we saw some concerns with pass protection or pass defense there at the end with Ryan Tannehill and how the Titans were able to climb back into that football game. But, yeah, you're right, 6-0. We got a great pass rush. Our offense is clicking unlike last year. I haven't felt this way about a Steeler team in a long time. It just seems like this could be our year once again, Peyton.
Once again. This is the best start of the Big Ben era. This is the first time he's been undefeated this deep in the season. So, did I sink a battleship there? Was that one of your five storylines to watch down the home stretch?
Actually, you know, I think the Steelers are a very compelling story, and it's definitely one to watch as we move forward. I didn't pick them. I think it's a little boring. I think that the Steelers are going to be talked about regardless because of their 6-0 record. So, I think there are some far more interesting ones with what we've seen transaction-wise and shake-up-wise. My first one, Peyton, is If the Tom Brady-led Buccaneers can go out here and win a Super Bowl in the NFC, to me, with the weapons surrounding him on offense, Mike Evans, Fournette, Gronk, Antonio Brown now, with their stout defense, Levante David and Devin White doing everything for that team, the Buccaneers could very well come out of the NFC, and it's not something that I saw before the season. I was very high in the camp of Tom Brady's washed. He's got a noodle arm, but they've proven me wrong week to week, even the concerns I had about that young secondary. Jamel Dean has dispelled all of them alongside Antoine Winfield. This Buccaneers team is dominant top to bottom, and I think they can make some waves even in a very tough, deep NFC this season.
They have certainly looked the part more so than I anticipated. The offensive line is better than I thought it would be. Tristan Wirfs has stepped in and been a legit Pro Bowl left tackle from day one against very good pass rushers. The secondary you hit on, miles better than I thought they were going to be, and that largely might be in part and in tandem with the pass rush that has been so good. But this is not the situation we thought coming into the year, but I think it is the situation now with them following this team throughout the rest of the year. Is Tom Brady going to regress? Is there going to be a fall off? Because he's had bad moments this game. He's been horrible this year. He's been horrible under pressure all season long. That's been a growing thing. He just doesn't want to get hit anymore. And if teams can generate pressure on him, he's looked pretty bad. So somehow Tom Brady has become the Achilles heel of this football team, and that feels very weird to me, but that's the story I'm tracking with them as they pursue a Super Bowl berth.
I think that it's concerning, yes, his age, but what I saw against the Raiders dispels any argument against Tom Brady for the rest of the season. And I think you said it best, Peyton. If Tom Brady is the Achilles heel of your team, you're probably a really good football team regardless. If the Buccaneers' success is dependent on Tom Brady's play, I don't know if they can depend on him, obviously, as you touched on with the offensive line and how poor they have looked at moments, although they are better than I thought before the season as well. Under fire, Tom Brady has not looked great. He has rushed passes. He has made bad balls that have been intercepted, and we've seen a lot of pick sixes this season as well. I think Tampa Bay is going to be successful regardless now with the weapons that they have around him. I think Brady's game has always been predicated on short, quick passing and decisions at the line of scrimmage and reading defenses. That doesn't go away, and now with shields to hide behind on this offense, with Wirfs, with Fournette, with Antonio Brown. He's got so many playmakers, Peyton, I think it almost doesn't matter.
Yeah, and you may be right. And I do want to cite a statistic here. I think it's about being able to generate pressure. Because when Tom Brady's got a clean pocket, this offense has helped him to prove that the arm power is still there. It's what Arians does. It's what he's always done. Chuck the ball down the field. And Brady is connected on, I said this earlier in the show, the third highest number in the NFL of passes of 20-plus amongst all eligible quarterbacks. He's hit 25 so far this year, and it's been a big part of their offense. But if you don't have time to do that, that's how you kind of undo a Bruce Arians offense. And when you couple that with the fact that these are last year's numbers, but they are indicative of what's happened this year, I have been unable to find his pressure statistics so far in a Buccaneers uniform. Last year, his completion percentage fell from 71% to 34% when he wasn't in a clean pocket. And I think that's just kind of going to have to be what teams do. When Khalil Mack was able to apply pressure to him, the Buccaneers didn't look like a very good football team. When Cam Jordan was able to get after him, the Buccaneers didn't look like a very good football team. And I think that's just going to kind of be where things go. If the Buccaneers can get time to throw, they're going to be really hard to stop. If not, well, your defense is in worse situations, you're throwing interceptions, the offense loses confidence, and they are very beatable. That's where I'm at with them. It is a huge storyline to track, though, throughout the back end here, because they probably are emerging as the most adequate competitor for the Chiefs, I think. I've got one that ties into that here, and it's, how big of an impact does Antonio Brown have? You followed the man closely when he was in Pittsburgh. Everything that happened in Oakland, league exempt list, all the allegations that went with him. It's been a whirlwind for Antonio Brown as of late. But the football player is still maybe the best receiver in the NFL. And you just gave that to Tom Brady in this offense. What do you think of that whole situation, him signing in Tampa?
Well, I wanted to see Antonio get signed just because he's a supreme football talent. I think he's got the best feet of maybe any receiver I've ever seen. And we saw the clear connection between him and Brady off the bat in their time in New England, scoring a touchdown in that first game. Antonio Brown could very well be the best receiver still in the league, and I think he does a lot for the offense. And not only what numbers he's going to put up with Brady individually, he's going to get Gronk open, which I think is the scariest factor in all of this is, how do you guard an offense that has Antonio Brown and Mike Evans taking you deep, taking you to the sidelines, with Chris Godwin going over the middle?
Yeah, and his injury is huge.
It's crazy how open it's going to seem for this Buccaneers offense. The only caveat I have to that with AB is potentially with Bruce Arians, if AB and him don't get along, I don't think we have to worry about what he does to the team, because I think Arians will just axe him and move on completely, and that'll probably close the chapter to Antonio Brown's football career.
Yeah, no, it is a no-risk, high-reward trade, most likely, for a team that just continues to just stockpile these weapons up. Gronk looks like he's finally kind of emerging and coming back into his own. He was asked to get into football shape very quickly. It was always going to take a little bit of time before we really saw what he was going to be in this offense, and we're starting to get some answers there. And, you know, every 5 years or so, you get what is a truly generational receiver talent in the NFL. It's that guy that feels like while he's playing, he's already wearing the gold jacket. Like you're watching somebody that's just a notch kind of ahead of everybody else in greatness. It was Larry Fitzgerald. He handed the torch to Calvin Johnson, who retired prematurely. And then we got Antonio Brown. And the numbers on Brown are ridiculous. AB has had no fewer than 1,284 receiving yards in his last six full seasons. It's just what happens inside the helmet, no pun intended there with him, that I think is going to determine what he can be. Because if he is mentally sound and locked in and a part of this football team without problems, it's going to be devastating for defenses. But I'm not betting on that based on what we've seen from him. I think he's not on this football team in a month.
Wow. You think he's done that quick? You think he's that detrimental to the locker room?
Have we ever seen somebody just go off the deep end like we saw Antonio Brown?
No. I don't think we have. There are some guys, maybe I would just say head injury-wise, maybe a Jim McMahon, but like credibility and just where they were, he was the best receiver in football and at the top of his game. I don't think anyone's ever fell that far. Maybe if we go outside into another sport, maybe Tiger Woods, but those are the only two I can come up with.
Yeah, and I encourage you, and I'm not going to bring light to the issue here, to go back and look at the reasons why Antonio Brown was on the league exempt list. And I'm not talking to you, Logan. I'm talking to the people listening to this program, because when you see that and you see the graphics the NFL's putting up where, like, Antonio Brown's in a Tampa jersey and it's like, welcome back to the league, and it's just like, I don't understand how somebody can do the things he did and seem so wrong-footed and out of control and just rein it back in a year. I just feel like that's been swept under the rug, and we're just celebrating Antonio Brown, the football player, and I don't want to just tread this stuff up, but it is relevant with him. It is part of the baggage, and we'll see if it catches up to him, because he wanted to go to Las Vegas, or I guess it was Oakland at the time, and that was so, so quickly over. And you saw Pittsburgh settle to sell him for so, so, so much less than you would think he was worth based on what he's been able to do in his career. And it just tells me that this guy is not very stable at the moment.
Well, and Peyton, I think, the mental stability comes into question. But I think that was a plan set out by Antonio Brown the second he got dealt from Pittsburgh.
Maybe.
I think he planned to get kicked out of Oakland and go to New England to be with Brady all along.
Right. Well, and then Brady apparently was pushing for this very hard, and that's kind of the reason why Tampa Bay did it. So that may also have something to do with everything going on with them and in Tampa Bay right now. And I think it's a huge story to track. We've talked a lot about Tampa Bay so far. Who's next on your list?
I've got Baker Mayfield and the Browns, and they've been polarizing, to say the least, as the start of the season. Me personally, I think that Baker Mayfield is an average NFL quarterback. I don't think he does anything exceptionally well. He's not an extreme athlete like we see now, the Kyler Murrays, the Lamar Jacksons, the Russell Wilsons. He doesn't throw a extremely great football, and the game just seems like it moves a little too fast for Mayfield. I know that he's coming off of a 5-touchdown performance against the Bengals, which was impressive.
22 straight completions.
The only relevant member of the Bengals secondary is Jesse Bates. I'm not going to applaud a guy who, and we saw him tear up the Bengals in week two as well.
Yeah, true.
I think the Browns are such an interesting team to look at, even a really good measure, expected win-loss, and they do this by point differential. Peyton, their expected win-loss is 3-4, which can just indicate how misleading that 5-2 record really can be.
Yeah.
And off of Baker in the offense, outside of Myles Garrett and Harrison at safety in the back end, Denzel Ward, this defense has been extremely vulnerable to allowing teams to run all over them. The run stopping up front has not been impressive. Again, outside of Myles Garrett, nobody really on this defensive line doing anything. I just personally don't think the Browns are that good a football team, and I think the 5-2 record has been exaggerated at this point by a lot of people.
Well, I mean, you look at the two really good teams that they've played so far, the truly good teams, and as much as I like Indianapolis's roster, I can't put them up there because Phillip Rivers. So with the Browns, you're looking at a team that is 5-2. You don't know if you can trust the 5-2. I think I trust it more than the Bears 5-2, but maybe not as much as the Buccaneers 5-2. If to put it in that kind of terms. But with Baker, I think this is going to be his time to prove it. He's in an offense that doesn't get the best out of him. He is at his best, taking snaps out of the shotgun, getting out of the pocket, and making things happen when the play breaks down. Not necessarily everything a defense, but you've seen him do this, go under center, run this play action stuff with multiple tight ends without complaining because he wants to win at the end of the day. I think that's kind of been what the season has been so far for him. Last year was a wash. That's Freddie Kitchens. Forget about it. I don't care. First year, he showed some promise, but some of the issues that have plagued him, the ball security stuff, has been a problem throughout his career. I think he's a good quarterback. I don't know if he's a great one, but I think he might be a great competitor and winner. And now without Odell, without Nick Chubb for the near time, It's going to come down to him. When he was asked to step up, he stepped up. That was against the Bengals. Let's see if he can do it throughout the rest of the season and get the Browns back in the playoffs, because with three wild cards available, they are in pole position to do so. If they fall apart, it'll be on Baker Mayfield. If they make it to the playoffs, it'll be on Baker Mayfield. So I think this is going to be a really good gauge for him the rest of the year.
Yeah, I agree, Peyton. I think that it's going to be a sort of prove-it year for Baker, but I think the Browns have almost handcuffed themselves. Well, obviously, they took him with the number one pick, you're immediately going to, but they built a really solid offense around Baker, and if he isn't the quarterback, they really just, if they can't find a guy in free agency that they really like and they're not sold on Baker at the end of the year, if you finish at 8-8, I don't know if that quarterback's available for you to move on from Baker here at the end of the season or is going to be able to be found in free agency. I just think that I don't know if the Browns can ever be successful in the playoffs or as a team with Baker.
But right now for them, making the playoffs is a goal, right?
Right. Yeah, in this season, I think they have to. With the three wild card spots, as you mentioned, the 5-2 record, they have to push forward with Baker this season. This is their Super Bowl.
Yeah, just to even get there, I think this year would be considered a massive, massive victory for them. No, I think you're right. This is kind of a make-or-break year for them and him specifically. Let's move on here. This one is the thing that's emerging to me as maybe the chief storyline in the NFL. The race to the bottom. Who's going to get Trevor Lawrence? It will be the Jets. They're going to go 0-16. I am pretty much, at this point, gun to my head, I would say 0-16 is more likely than them winning a game. The rest of their schedule's tough, which is not great. You saw Trevor saying today that he may actually stay in college if that happens, which is interesting to say the least. We might have another John Elway situation. But I want to talk about some of the teams that are close to the bottom that aren't the Jets. So, right now in the league, we've got 7 1-win football teams or fewer. That's teams that haven't won a game or have won one game. That is the highest total at this point in the year since 1986, Logan. I think a lot of that is because of Trevor. There are some of the teams that are mixed in there at the bottom that I don't think are bad football teams. The Cowboys, Vikings, Patriots, and Falcons. How bad do they end up? How does that influence their future? Does that maybe drive them to draft a quarterback, even if it's not Trevor Lawrence, Justin Fields, maybe even Mac Jones, Trey Lance? These guys are going to be up at the top, and if you're going to be in the top 10 picking, I don't know. If you're one of these teams, you've got a guy maybe that is your quarterback, but also you could upgrade it. So I think it's an interesting thing because if you had the real answer at quarterback, I don't think you'd be picking in the top 10.
Yeah, I think a team like the Vikings could really use a Trey Lance, a Justin Fields, whoever they can get their hands on, just because you don't want to be stuck with that Kirk Cousins contract for any longer than you have to be, and you also want to have a contingency plan ready to go whenever you decide to get off of them. So I think the Vikings definitely need to. The Jets have to look at, I know you want to get off of them, they have to look at a quarterback regardless.
Yeah, that's going to happen.
Just because that's naturally how the offseason process happens, teams want a QB. The Jaguars, now Peyton, I want to focus on this for a second. Do you think the Jaguars move on from Gardner Minshew? Because personally, from what I have seen, I think Minshew is similar to just a lot of quarterbacks in the fact that pressure gets to him, and in Jacksonville, he really doesn't have the line he needs to succeed. If Minshew puts up pretty good numbers and he's looked pretty good with a guy like DJ Chark making some tough passes, we saw that offensive explosion last week against the Chargers and in the first week against the Colts and against the Titans as well. Even if Minshew puts up good numbers, do you think the Jaguars explore a quarterback change?
Oh, I think they're going to have to. He was in a bad situation from the start where the Jags were never going to commit to him long term. If you've got the opportunity to take Justin Fields, you're taking Justin Fields. I'm sorry. It's tough. Gardner is so similar to Ryan Fitzpatrick in so many ways that I think he's going to be a journeyman. I think he's going to be fun. He's a serviceable NFL quarterback, but he's not a great one. And he's not in a situation where they can win. I don't think it'll be in season this year, even though they have talked a little bit about benching him as of late. But I definitely don't think they will commit to him long term. As for the other teams on this list of teams that I think could take a quarterback if the season really goes badly, what do you think of the Falcons? It sounds like they want to move on from Matt Ryan. They feel like they've kind of reached their ceiling, and with a new coach and GM coming in, they're probably going to want their guy. What do you think of them as a team? Do you think we're going to see a fire sale from them at the deadline coming up this week? Maybe get rid of some of the old household names like a Julio Jones? Or do you think that they may wait for the offseason and see where their pick lands?
Personally, what I think the Falcons should do is try to build up this defense as best you can around Matt Ryan. This offense is there. I would try to keep the offense as best intact. You're not going to get much better with a guy like Gurley, Ryan, Julio Jones, Ridley. You have top-end talent, and they're putting up 26 points a game. It's just been this defense. I do think the Falcons need to explore an option for the future. I don't know if it's this year in this draft, personally, again, because I think Matt Ryan is still a tremendously talented quarterback, 2,000 yards, 12 touchdowns, and 3 picks. Obviously a former MVP as well. He's just got veteran experience that you cannot trade out for something that a rookie is not going to have, a young guy. And I also think Matt Ryan would be a good mentor for whatever quarterback you try to bring in. So maybe explore it. I would not replace Matt Ryan, though. I think this team should try to keep the core in offense and focus on building his defense and maybe a Super Bowl, a playoff run at the least with Matt Ryan still on the roster. It just offenses just aren't built this talented. You need to take advantage of the seasons that you are going to have with all this talent.
Yeah. Okay, last one here before a break. I mentioned the Cowboys on this list of teams that could potentially, with the right draft pick, look at a quarterback. I think that's true. You've got Dak Prescott as a free agent coming off this injury, and I know that it might be the elephant in the room and nobody wants to say it, but I will because it's a fact that they will have to actually evaluate their options now because they don't know what they're going to get when Dak comes back. We saw a similar injury, and it's in basketball, but with Gordon Hayward manifests itself in all types of different ways, and I know Dak isn't the problem in Dallas, and I want him to recover. I just don't know if Dallas should feel beholden to commit to him long term. If they're in the top 10 and they could pick a different quarterback and start something else over and do it for a lot cheaper than keeping Dak Prescott around, is that out of the realm of possibility to you?
Nothing's out of the realm of possibility with that crazy old guy running the Cowboys. I think they very well could explore drafting a quarterback just because. Yeah, there are some concerns with Dak coming off an injury, with Dak sometimes being questioned as the answer and the problem in this offense. Personally, I think that Dak is a really good quarterback, and I think that the Cowboys should stick it out with him.
Yeah.
There's this part of me that thinks that the Cowboys, I don't know. I'm going to say I thought they could finish out with some wins, but dude, Peyton, this offensive line is horrible. I don't know if anybody can win any football games behind this O-line.
Well, everybody's hurt.
And that happens. That's why I think maybe don't go out and get a quarterback. Try to address other positions of need while you can, because you're going to have a high draft pick. Go ahead and get whatever position you need and just hope and keep your fingers crossed that Dak comes back the same player he left off the field as.
Yeah, I'm curious. I'm rooting for Daxonville because that just the T-shirts would sell. But just thinking about Dak Prescott in a place like if Cleveland could pull off a one-for-one Baker Mayfield for Dak Prescott sign-and-trade situation, or maybe even New England for Dak Prescott, I just think it could be good for both parties. It just doesn't seem like a very good relationship at the moment. I'll leave it there. Run It Up will continue after a word from our sponsors. This is WKGM Fox Sports Knoxville Fan Run Radio. This is Run It Up in your earphones right now, in your ear holes. That wasn't great.
Wow.
Why? WKGN Fox Sports Knoxville, broadcasting from the White Claw Hard Seltzer Studios here on our beautiful campus in Knoxville, Tennessee. White Claw Hard Seltzer, crafted using seltzer water, 5% alcohol, and a hint of fruit flavor, only 100 calories, and now available in 8 refreshing flavors, including fresh watermelon, sweet tangerine, and juicy lemon. Each one a wave of pure refreshment. White Claw Hard Seltzer, it's made pure.
Mm-mm, tasty.
Allegedly. Well, I don't know. I'm 21. The Fed's lurking. Logan Camden's not, so he can't attest to this. What he can attest to is football at the professional level. That was a professional level segue. All right, so we are breaking down our top 10 storylines in the NFL on a Top 10 Tuesday. Logan Camden, I do believe it was your turn.
Yeah, I'm up. I thank you for approving my acumen on football. And no, I cannot attest to any White Claw beverages.
For legal reasons.
Yes, of course. I know the feds are watching. the next storyline, I think, is really the one that to focus on the rest of the season. I think maybe more than any other one is the NFC West. Will the Niners miss the playoffs off of the season? You know, they appeared in the Super Bowl. What's the ceiling on the Seahawks and the Cardinals? They're so offensively driven and can just put up points in a hurry. And then, of course, what are the Rams? Because they have been so up and down all year long. And then,
right.
Honestly, a really dominant performance over the Bears on Monday Night Football. I just think the NFC West in total is one of the most interesting divisions in football.
Well, I want to gauge you on this because I don't think it's going to happen, but it could, and the mere fact that it could is lunacy. What do you think the odds are that all four of these teams make the postseason and occupy all three wildcard spots coming out of this division?
Very slim, but I really want to see it just to drive home. How weird is that? The first year of introducing three wildcard teams, one division claims them all. But if the NFC South, I mean, if the Panthers and Saints slack up, it's a real possibility. I don't think it happens. I think just with all the interdivisional matchups, I think naturally the Niners, Rams, Cardinals, or Seahawks, two of those teams are going to drop the games to their division rivals and naturally drop off. But I think it's interesting, and I think all of these teams are talented enough to make a playoff push.
Yeah, I would generally agree. I don't quite get the Rams because... And I do watch the Rams play football. I know that they have other good players. Taylor Rapp's fine, but it just feels like a bunch of average NFL guys. Then like Michael Brockers, Woods, Cooper Kupp, who's been below average or below his standard at least this year. Jared Goff, who's like a semi-decent NFL quarterback. And then you've got like these two supernovas on your defensive side of the ball. And Aaron Donald and Jalen Ramsey, and it just doesn't feel like they're that good of a football team, but they just keep winning, so I don't know what to do with them. The Cardinals are legit. They're going to go where Kyler takes them. They should be 6-0 right now, considering the teams they lost to. They are better than both the teams they lost to, the Panthers and the Lions. The Seahawks are just, every week it gets hit home to me harder and harder how bad this football team is, aside from Russell Wilson and the weapons. Right? Is that where you're at, too, with the Seahawks right now?
I've been with the Seahawks like that since the Legion of Boom died. I mean, week in, week out, it is a dogfight to the end. Every single Seattle Seahawks team, every Seattle Seahawks game, and you're exactly right. It's Russell Wilson consistently keeping them in football games. If I'm not mistaken, Peyton, I think they have the literal worst pass defense in the NFL by yardage.
Yes, they do.
This year's Seattle Seahawks team goes against any logic or football convention whatsoever. They don't make sense that they can continue to keep winning games with a defense that is this atrocious.
Yeah, Logan, you make a good point. The funniest part about that is they've allowed the highest total of yards, and they've already had their bye week. Unlike most of the teams in the NFL, that paints how bad they were throughout the first stretch of games, and they started off 5-0, but they didn't play anybody. Not a single team with a winning record. Their best win was probably over a pretty bad New England team or a pretty bad Dallas team. They finally played a good team, and they maybe should have won, but they didn't. And that's what I keep focusing on. I don't know. I think Seattle is much more likely to finish as a wild card as people want to give credence to, which means the division's wide open. And that's going to be fun. And what can San Francisco do, honestly, as well, without Nick Bosa? I thought a couple weeks ago they might need to go in the tank if they lost to the Rams, but now they've rattled off two in a row, and they're giving themselves a fighting chance again. So it'll be fascinating to track. We're going to move on, though, because we're running a little bit short on time, as always, because this conversation with you is always very good. So it takes a little bit more time. I want to look at the Ravens here. And this is a bigger picture question, but for the Ravens, a team that is schematically not set up to play with Kansas City, a team that has high expectations that it doesn't look like they should be capable of meeting necessarily based on their last meeting with the Chiefs and what happened in the postseason the last time around. What happens with them long term if this formula doesn't work again? Maybe they even beat the Steelers coming up here. Maybe they only lose the one game the rest of the way, which I think is not off the table. They could go 15-1. But what happens if they fall short in the playoffs again, which I would bet on? That's something I want to keep an eye on.
I don't know if the Ravens change anything. To me, their formula, yeah, with Lamar Jackson, it may not work against teams like the Chiefs and may not be engineered to make comebacks and score in bunches like that. If they don't do it this year, I think you have to address the wide receiver position. Because you're not getting rid of Lamar. You're just not. He's a former MVP, and
no, absolutely
when your
not.
Quarterback can, when your quarterback is the fastest guy on the football field,
yeah,
you got to hold on to him. I just think with Marquise Brown and Mark Andrews, in my opinion, really being his only reliable receiving options, I think you just have to get guys around him. This offensive line is as solid as ever. This defense is top five in the league. The Ravens will be ready to compete. The Ravens will be competing for a Super Bowl the next 5 years, regardless of
probably
what changes happen, as long as they have that defense intact.
Mm-hmm.
I think you go back and you just try to sign veteran wideouts that will work with Lamar. You try to draft young studs. And the Baltimore kills the draft, and they kill trades every season. They are such a well-run organization. No major changes will come regardless of this season, in my opinion.
Yeah, I think there's something to that. I am a little concerned. I'm a little concerned at this point that in pro sports, you don't get a long leash. And a lot of franchises don't believe that being able to win a title, anything other than that, is, I guess, what I'm trying to say. If you can't win a title, it's not really worth it. A lot of franchises think that way. I don't know if the Ravens are one, but I do think they kind of have a hard ceiling right now. I like Willie Snead. I like some of the pass catchers. It's not a perfect offense, but with how much they have tied up in the defense, and you just saw them double down on their pass rushing ability as this team that loves to blitz with Yannick Ngakoue, that's the trade they chose to pull the trigger on. I don't know. It seems like they have their formula and they're riding with it, but it's not one that I'm sure can really win big, so I think they get embarrassed in the postseason by Kansas City again, like they did on Monday night early in the season. They've really got to do some reevaluating on how this team is built, because Lamar Jackson said it. Kansas City looks like their kryptonite. Kansas City's not going anywhere, so maybe you should look somewhere else. That's something I want to keep an eye on. What's your next one?
My next one is who can win the worst division in the history of football? Peyton, I've seen some bad NFC West. I mean, we've seen a 7-win winner of that division, an 8-win winner. But with injuries, with all we've seen, this is the worst division ever. And I would like to confidently come on here, on Run It Up, on the radio, and tell you who I think can win this division. Is there a way they can, like, all lose and we give it to the fourth-place finisher of the NFC West? All of these teams will get blown out in the play. They all stink. They all have underlying factors, and injuries, obviously a huge one for the Eagles, the Cowboys, every one of these football teams, but I think any of these teams make the playoffs, they're getting blown out on sight.
Yeah, I would tend to agree with that. There is a scenario that plays out here where the Eagles go 4-11-1 and win the division. I think that when you're looking at a team like the Giants that is as likely to finish first in their division, I think, as they are with the first overall pick, this is historic in a lot of ways, and it's exciting in a good and a bad way at the same time. Who do you think is going to win this division?
I mean this genuinely. I think I'm going to take the Washington football team.
Wow.
And, you know, I don't know why. the Eagles' offensive line to me is too. The Eagles are such a tricky team because Carson Wentz seems like some games he can just turn it on at the flip of the switch against New York when they needed him most.
Yeah, he stepped up.
I think some of these late games also have been enhanced by some poor referee calls in the Ravens and the Giants game. But Wentz has been there in moments. The Cowboys are done. I'm packing my bags on their season. I'd tell them to go the Giants route and just get ready for the draft, prepare for the offseason. Mm-hmm. I think it's between the Eagles and the football team. I'm leaning but towards one of the two. But to me, the Washington football team has the best pass rush. And with every team in this division, how bad their offensive line is, accentuated by the Cowboys' 25-3 loss and what happened to Andy Dalton. I think just because they have the best pass rush in this division that they can make a run at it. And a game against the Bengals, a game against the Lions, Panthers also on the schedule as well. They've got some winnable games.
Yeah, I think it'll be the Eagles. I do think it'll be the Eagles. They'll scrap into the playoffs. Like they always do. I want to go with the Washington football team. I like some of the stuff they have in the building. Love their front seven. Ron Rivera's great. Beat cancer in season. Didn't miss a game. That takes a special kind of person and a special kind of leader. But with all that said, I just think the Eagles are a tad bit better. I don't know. Everything feels disgusting when I talk about this division. So we're going to stop talking about this division and take a break. WKGM Fox Sports Knoxville Fan Run. That music means it's closing time here at Run It Up, but we're not quite tired yet. 9:48 p.m. on the East Coast. We still got some things to get into with Logan Camden on this Top 10 Tuesday. Our Top 10 NFL storylines the rest of the way. We've got a couple things left to say. Logan, I believe it was my turn there to give my fourth on the list. Yes?
Yeah, you're up.
All right. You talked about one division. I'm going to talk about another one. I pose the question, can the Miami Dolphins catch the Bills and win the division? Only one game back now as they insert Tua Tagovailoa into the starting lineup.
This is a heat check hot take right here.
Logan, before you continue, I must say I am a closet Dolphins fan and had them number 10 this week in my power rankings.
What?
Yes. Most outlets had them at 20. I had them at 10.
We'll see if that pans out. I like the pick, Peyton. I think it's a bold one. I don't think they catch the Bills, although the race is going to be close. I think a lot of people are sleeping on this Miami Dolphins team. They've got elite corners on the outside. Obviously, it's what all teams talked about, but it's true. Byron Jones and Xavier Howard have played shutdown football on the back end, and Bobby McCain has also showed up and played great shutdown football for them. And they've got a pretty decent pass rush, Christian Winkle, Wilkins. And this offensive line isn't bad enough to the point where I'm scared for Tua stepping in. I personally didn't really understand bringing Tua in after all Ryan Fitzpatrick had done and how good he looked. Maybe Flores he's got a little more foresight in front of him. He knows that maybe Tua's a really special talent and can do something. I think that I don't expect the Dolphins to catch the Bills. I think the question that people should be worried about are, can the Dolphins make a wild card spot? I think that is a very reasonable thing to think, because not only because the Dolphins are good, but also because the New England Patriots can't get right on offense.
I'm going to go ahead and say it. They're winning this division. I think that Ryan Fitzpatrick was holding them back, actually. You look at their losses, and it's because Ryan Fitzpatrick threw multiple interceptions. It ended up being a one-possession game, and you have to wonder, well, maybe if Fitz doesn't do that Fitz thing where he's extremely variable, they win some of these games. If you talk to people who really care about this team, they are so ready for Tua to play. My thought process is this. This was probably their plan the entire time. They wanted to get to the bye week, give Tua the extra 2 weeks to prepare, and put him in. See what they have. Because if they don't have their quarterback, well, they've got the Texans pick riding on up there that's probably going to be top five. They want to see what they have. I think Tua is the answer, and I think that this team with all their pass catchers, Brian Flores, this defense, they're a lot more complete than a Bills team that is starting to show a lot of cracks here on the offensive side of the ball. Give me the Dolphins. I think that they are going to be the best team in this division the rest of the way. Logan Camden, your next one.
Before I get in my next one, wow, Peyton, I didn't even think about that Texans pick. Bill O'Brien really sold on the Texans franchise.
Yep, and it will factor into my fifth on this list, but continue.
My next one, Peyton, is it really just the structure of the AFC focusing on them. Who knocks out the Kansas City Chiefs
in the
playoffs?
Nobody.
A very good answer. I've had the Chiefs at number one in my power rankings all season. When you have a weapon like Patrick Mahomes, there's just a gap between the Chiefs offense and everybody else. I think you can look at a team. I think an interesting scenario to look at in the AFC, Peyton, is if the Chiefs end up, now I don't know how this happens exactly, they end up with the 2 or 3 seed, potentially because of, you know, crazy performance from the Steelers, the Titans, the Bills, somehow they could end up taking on the Raiders, who their only loss to was this season, in the first round, maybe as if the Raiders are in the 6 or 7 seed. And they have a potential to take on a tough team regardless of where they finish, just because of how competitive other teams in the AFC have been, potentially the Colts earning a wild card or the Ravens earning a wild card. I think this is a very competitive AFC, a lot more competitive than last season. Who do you think, Peyton, is the best team, likelihood-wise, to knock off the Chiefs?
Oh, it's Pittsburgh.
Even more, you think, than Tennessee with how they can run the football and hold on to the ball?
I think that's the exact wrong way about playing the Chiefs. You can keep the ball away from Pat Mahomes. Okay, cool. He can still avalanche 21 points onto you in 8 minutes. And I think you have to have an offense that can score and a defense that can be opportunistic. And as bad as the Steelers' back end has been in stretches, and as ill-advised as it is to consistently blitz Pat Mahomes, because that's the Steelers' identity, I do believe their offense can score with Kansas City. The way they are built, how multiple they are, how they can spread you out with their receivers. And I do believe their defense is good enough to get a takeaway or two against Kansas City. So I think they're the only team in the league, other than the Buccaneers, that are architected in a way that can push Kansas City. The Chiefs have been on autopilot all year long, and they're still scoring 30 every game. This is the best team that we've seen since the 16-0 Patriots. And they're like the Warriors in the sense that they won the championship, they climbed the mountain. So they don't really care as much in the regular season. They don't push as hard. We've seen what the Chiefs look like at full throttle. It's what happened on Monday night in Baltimore. And people let that drift out of their minds as the Chiefs kind of struggle around and struggle with the Chargers. And when the big games come up, when they play the Buccaneers later this year, when they get another chance at Las Vegas, watch them. And watch how things change, because that's what you're going to see in the postseason. I don't think there's a team in the AFC that can really push them, aside from Pittsburgh. I could see it. I still think they're better than Pittsburgh. That's my stance on that. We've got 3 minutes here. I've got a big take to get to. This is my favorite one on the list. Maybe shouldn't have left it for last. But this is my biggest question the rest of the way. How bad does Houston have to be before Deshaun Watson says to hell with this and decides he no longer wants to be a part of that? Because
I think,
I just want to say here, everyone knows how bad Houston has played this year, and we all know it's not going to get better. All their picks are gone. They're capped out. This is their team. So the only hope of changing it is hiring this revelation of a coach. And with what I've heard about how they're being managed right now, I just don't see that happening. So for Deshaun Watson, how do you find a way out of that? Do you care about winning? And I think Deshaun Watson cares about winning quite a good deal. I don't think he wants to turn into Warren Moon, who never really vied for anything significant in terms of championship acclaim. He was a great player and a boundary breaker and a huge signifier of success for black quarterbacks in the NFL, and I'm not taking anything away from him, but in terms of winning the big one, it never happened. He was never in a position to do that, and that looks like Deshaun Watson in the prime of his career is going to be in a position where he's kind of wasting it. So I think for the first time in league history, we could see a quarterback get moved in the prime of their career, locked up long term, and I have to wonder what that kind of draft comp could look like, because this football team is not good, and they are not good now, and they're not getting better.
Well, and honestly, Peyton, what else are the Texans supposed to do? I think trading Watson might be the only thing that could salvage how bad Bill O'Brien has left them off.
Total restart.
You get a haul of picks, you trade away a guy like J.J. Watt, you trade away David Johnson, because you have to. Bill O'Brien backed them into this corner, and like you said, Peyton, Deshaun Watson has this. Anytime I see Deshaun Watson play, he's just as good as an improviser as anybody at the quarterback position I've ever seen, and I hate seeing him waste away behind a horrible team, and more importantly, a horrible offensive line.
Yep. No, man, here are the numbers. So he's playing at an MVP level this season, and it doesn't matter because they are so bad. He is second in the league in passing yards this year, 15 touchdowns to 5 picks. He also has 30 completions of 20-plus yards, which is tops in the league, and is 41% on his passes. 41% of them yield a first down. And it doesn't matter because the Texans are that bad. And again, it's not getting any better. We're out of time. I'd love to dig into this more. That's Logan Camden of the Nerd Sesh Podcast. Maybe we'll take Wing It Wednesday and really exercise some of the Deshaun Watson discussion, because I think there is one to be had, and it's sneaking up on Houston. This has been Run It Up. We'll run it back tomorrow. We got a little bit better today. Bye-bye.